It's June 23rd, 1995. You're about to listen to Bathroom Spears Broadside's Ed Frye as our guest. And you are listening to Bathroom Spears Broadside's here at 89.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's a Friday morning. It's June 23rd, and with us in the studio here is that attorney about town, that straight-out front-row opponent of our current DA, Art Danner, against whom there is currently a recall campaign, Ed Frye. Say hello, Ed.
Hello, Ed.
Hi, there you go. Stand-up comedy as we sit down here. Well, the reason I called you, Ed, is because you actually, I guess you probably have talked about this experience either. It's been referred to on the air, I know. The FCC came to Free Radio Santa Cruz. I guess it was shortly after your show or after you were there as a guest. Maybe you can kind of brief us on what happened earlier this week.
Yeah, it looks like the FCC are trying to make a celebrity out of me.
We were here I was here, rather, on Tuesday with my regular 1 o'clock show, 1 to roughly 2:30. And I left at 2:30, and about 2:33, a couple of FCC thugs showed up in their jack boots, looking for me. And the guys here who saw them and talked to them, fortunately, asked them if they had a warrant, and they said no, and so they sent them on their way. But they made it real clear that they're looking for me, but you know they haven't really contacted me, and I guess they don't know how to look in the yellow pages for lawyers. And I've got my sign out front there on Cedar and Maple, so I'm real visible if they really want to find me. What I think they probably want to do is catch me here in the act while I'm on mic, so they can bust me or take some other action and make a deal out of it. I don't know why they pick on me rather than... Maybe they think I got some money I can pay fines.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, they got another thought coming.
They can take over the child care situation. Ed is the father of how many kids?
Well, depending on your daily census, up to 9. Right now we have 5 at home. They float in and out, you know.
I see. So you have quite a brood there that will surround you when the FCC comes with its clipboards and its business suits.
Yeah, it's a real legal team, and in fact they'll go to court with me and help me fight it out. But I think that the FCC are really biting off more than they can chew here, because the commitment here in Santa Cruz to free radio is pretty darn strong and getting stronger every day. And it's so clear that the monopolies, the media monopolies and the communications monopolies that the federal government keeps passing out to their friends leads to more and more abuse and less democracy. So we're going to fight it to the end here, and so the FCC is up against it if they come after us.
Yeah, I think I haven't really heard that the FCC has been successful anywhere in suppressing micro-broadcasting, as we call it, what we're doing here. I actually posted on the wall of the studio is the U.S. District Court decision in Northern California in the Dunifer case. And Stephen Dunifer, as some of our listeners may know, is actually one of the grand old men of free radio. He began free radio up in Berkeley back in, 93, 92, thereabouts. I think he was anticipated a few years before that in Illinois by a black micro-broadcasting radio station. But he went to court in, I guess it was January, and the decision by Judge Wilkins, Claudia Wilkins, essentially told the FCC that they could not suppress this station, this micro-broadcasting station, simply on the grounds that they had no license, because the FCC was not issuing licenses to small broadcasting stations. You have to have, I think, at least 100 watts of power, which costs, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I'm not quite sure the exact amount, but quite a hefty amount to start a radio station so that you can speak. So it's free speech for those with big pocketbooks.
What they really mean, Robert, is you need 10,000 watts of legal power behind you. So you need the money to hire the big corporate lobbyists and lawyers in Washington, D.C. to get you into the right halls and chambers and back rooms so that you'll be able to assume your place among those lofty people like Ted Turner and all the others who control the media. And in fact, it's real interesting when you read Ben Bagdikian's study of the media and how he shows that fewer and fewer and fewer people, as time go on, control not only the television and radio outlets, but also the newspapers, magazines. We're down to about 20 major holders now of media power in this country. And the thought is that by the year 2000, it's going to be down to about a half a dozen. People like General Electric, for example, world's largest defense contractor, is also one of the world's largest media conglomerates worldwide. And that's what NBC gives us, the General Electric News. So this is how it's coming to be, and that's why it makes stations like this all that much more crucial to our well-being and our good information.
Right, and I think that the word I'm getting is that stations like this are spreading. I don't have specific stats, but there are people trying to make sure that every Mexican village has a little radio station like this, so that the official line of the PRI, for example, the Institutional Revolutionary Party, so-called, in Mexico, that has ruled autocratically for years, no longer has a monopoly on what's happening in Mexico. And of course they don't, because we have such changes as the Zapatistas and what's been going on down there, which I can't give you much information on, but micro-broadcasting can have a fundamental impact, not simply here in our own country, in our own neighborhoods, but in poorer areas where the literacy rate is much less, and where it's where, again, the people down there, as the people here, are in the hands of large corporations and homogenized news and hits in the ass and that sort of thing.
Robert, speaking of homogenized news and controlled news, it's good to keep in mind who owns our local Santa Cruz County Sentinel, and that is the Dow Jones Company, direct from Wall Street. We get our news, local news here, direct from Wall Street. The same people who own the Dow Jones Corporation own the Santa Cruz County Sentinel. So we can't hope for a lot of objectivity there. So again, stations like this, outlets like this, are just have to be supported with all we've got, because that's about all we've got.
Yeah, I mean, Bruce McPherson, who was the editor of the Santa Cruz Urinal, as I call it, the Cent Anal, the Senile, whatever you want to call the trash that masquerades as a newspaper in our community, is now, of course, representative. He's made the great leap, and he's he's our U.S. Representative here. It's a state representative.
State Assembly.
He's state assembly representative. What was I thinking? You brought something to mind around the Sentinel. My mind is gone this morning, or not yet arrived, perhaps. I actually contacted Richard Edmondson in San Francisco. He's a liberation broadcaster who does really professional work for, I guess it's Radio Libre and Free Radio San Francisco. I think it has, there are two stations up there at least, and that has another name, the second one. He's done all kinds of great tapes, some of which have been aired on the station. And we were talking with him about, hoping to call him. Unfortunately, I may have hustled from my house so quickly this morning that I didn't bring his phone number. Another one of those minor tragedies that's always happening around my lack of preparation for this show. But he did give me some notes when we had a phone conversation earlier, and some thoughts, which I'm hoping I can find among my notes, pass on to you. Here we go. I interviewed him when I was in San Francisco several months ago about his experiences where the FCC actually tracked him down. And he let us know that apparently one of the same two agents that was looking for Ed Frey on Tuesday, and who, by the way, were told by Skidmark's Bob on the radio, a mainstay of the radio, that they could not come on the property, that they would get, should remove their coiffures and their clipboards and their wingtips to the sidewalk until they could find a search warrant. So I don't know if they've been back. I haven't heard that they've been back. But one of those agents was a man named David Doom, according to Richard in San Francisco, who apparently also went after Richard back in, I guess it was a year ago, 1994, it was either the fall, it could have been the spring of 95, when they triangulated Richard down. The Free Radio San Francisco was actually running around with a mobile transmitter, and they were actually trying to avoid being found. And before this decision came down in January that I mentioned previously, the Wilkins decision that said you cannot, we will not grant an injunction to shut down these micro broadcasting radio stations. We need a full hearing. You need to show, I mean, there are real free speech issues to be considered, and these issues will be considered on July 14th in, I guess it's a court in Oakland coming up. I can't give you the exact time or court, but it is happening on the 14th. We have an incoming call here, hopefully about free radio and the FCC's decision. Maybe we can pause on that and see what the story is. Hang on, caller.
Hi, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're on the air.
The very person I wanted to reach. This is Lotus Mayer.
Lotus, are you calling about free radio? Because that's what's happening right now.
Well,
we're discussing the FCC and so forth.
I see. Good.
Lotus, you're a member of the Welfare Parents Support Group, and
yes, that's where I am right now. I wanted to call and let you know, actually, not about the FCC, but a further thing about Linda Edwards Memorial.
Well, you can mention that. We'll probably be getting into that later in the show, but please go ahead. Linda Edwards is an activist who died on June 2nd, who worked in this community for a decade or more trying to assure rights for poor people. She died of liver cancer on the 2nd. Go ahead, Lotus. You are a close friend of hers.
And we'll miss her very much. I talked to the people from hospice who spent quite a bit of time with Linda during the last few weeks of her life. And Jan Landry, who's the chaplain there, who remembers her quite well, would be very happy to come and help us with the service in Loudon Nelson, 5:30, sharing some of her memories of Linda.
This will be what day?
The 28th of June.
That's next Wednesday.
Wednesday. Actually, Memorial is planned for the whole day. The time, 5:30 at Loudon Nelson, will be forming a circle on the lawn while spiritual elders and music. And we'll be sharing our memories of Linda, and we hope to share and remember the quiet, honest dignity and the passion of Linda's life. And the people from hospice have offered to help share, too.
I think there's also going to be an earlier thing at the starting at River and Josephine Streets. And Linda LeMaster has a flyer out on that.
Right. I have the whole thing right in front of me. You want me to give you the whole thing?
Well, you know, I'd appreciate it if you'd call me back like in about an hour if you're going to be around, because right now I've got Ed Fry here on a limited basis. He's our man on free radio.
We can do it another day. And hi, Ed.
Hi, Lotus.
I have to go off and start working for a change all day. So I'll catch you another day.
All right, well, I will be on the air on Monday from 10 to 12, and you certainly can call in then. And if anyone else is listening who wants to discuss this matter, I will be talking about Linda in a few minutes. And if you want to add something else, sure, go ahead. Don't let me censor you here.
I know there were some things in Linda's life that were problems that we were talking about, and hospice has also agreed to meet with anyone who's interested around that. And I just wanted to let you know before you went on the air, because I'm not sure what you're going to say, Robert. You know, you're a great guy, and you say all kinds of neat stuff.
Well, thank you. sometimes people don't like what I say.
Oh, that's true. Me, I'm one of them sometimes.
Yes, indeed. Well, yeah, if you want to, I guess maybe we should do is bring up the subjects on Monday, too, or if you can, call in a bit later, and I encourage you to turn on the radio so you can hear us.
Well, it's so frustrating, because my radio doesn't seem to have your station. It's too old. It was born too soon.
Really? Interesting. Mm-hmm. Then call in about, if you're around, call in about 20 minutes, or call on Monday, or call later in the day, and you can, of course, talk about this on any show. It doesn't have to be mine.
Okay.
And this is for all our listeners. You can call the station at 427-3772 or 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you can get on the air and you can speak as Lotus and I are now speaking.
Okay. Bye, Robert. Have a good day.
Hey, thank you, Lotus. I'm sorry that we didn't give you more time here.
No, that's fine.
Bye-bye.
Well, the discussions of Linda Edwards will be happening later in the show. I've got some more to say about that. Right now, continuing with the discussion of the recent FCC exploratory operations against this radio station that you're listening to. The FCC, we suspect, wants to close us down. We haven't been told that by the FCC, and no doubt they're just saying that they're just monitoring the situation, but I think they're here with a purpose. What do you think, Ed?
Yeah, I think part of it may be as a response to the KUSP complaints. I think the basis of those complaints has been taken care of, but they're still coming after us. You want to have another call?
Yeah, we do have another call. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz 89.3 FM.
Hi, Robert. I just wondered if you wanted Richard Edmondson's phone number.
Oh, that's very nice. This is Tom Reveille, Tom. How are you doing, Tom?
Fine.
That's good. Let me get a...
Still voiceless, but fine.
Hey, you can speak on my show at any time.
Thanks.
What is Richard's number?
415-386-3135.
Yeah, and if you want to call in later to talk about your letter to the Good Times, which stirred up a little controversy, feel free to do so.
Well, I don't want to talk about it. My letter said what I had to say, but I'm very happy to answer. I mean, if you want to talk about it, I'm happy. Why don't you call me at 454-9392 and we can discuss it?
Okay, if I don't have a copy of it with me, but if it's a future show, I might do that.
Okay.
I appreciate your calling in.
Okay, anytime.
Thanks, Tom.
Bye-bye.
So that's Tom. Tom Reveille, who is hopefully going to set up an alternate radio station himself. But we need the more radio stations around town, the better, as far as I'm concerned. And he's given us the number of Richard Edmondson, who is a San Francisco Free Radio man and a really fine interviewer and programmer who has done some great tapes that we actually have copies of here about Food Not Bombs events in San Francisco. Poverty rights and human rights violations up there, which of course is much on the minds of many of us because of the international gathering that's going on, because of the mass arrests that are happening daily in San Francisco around the issue of serving free food to poor and homeless people at UN Plaza. I'll give you some stats and information on that later in the show as well. I think what we may do now is give a call to Richard up there and see if we can get his views and get a little colloquy going between him and Ed Fry before Ed disappears into the legal never-never land where he frequently lives. Here, let's see if we can get him on the phone here. And you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM, and this is Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. One of your top quality shows every Monday and Friday from 10 to 12.
Hi there, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz calling Richard.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, Richard, how you doing?
Give me just a minute, okay? Can you hold on a second?
Sure, I can.
Looking up some of the documentation. Hang on just a
sure. Second. Sure. We earlier talked to Richard about his experiences in a bust on Potrero Hill, as I was telling the audience, I was telling you folks out there, that he was actually triangulated down. He was tracked down. He was tracked down while on the air, and let me get this phone right.
I think we can be heard like this on the air, but I'm not sure.
We're having a little mechanical problem here. Richard was triangulated down trying to do his normal broadcasting, which he was doing from a moving vehicle in San Francisco. That was happening for some time. And he got a notice. He got a fine, a notice. He had to pay $10,000. He's told that, Richard, or he's not there yet. So, and his lawyer responded to that, and there has been no subsequent follow-up by the FCC.
Okay.
Hi, Richard.
Hi.
So,
are we on the air now?
We are. Meet Ed Fry, Richard.
What's that?
Meet Attorney Ed Fry down here, who is the subject of some controversy because the FCC apparently was looking for him.
Oh, hi, Ed.
Hello, Richard. You asked if we're on the air. Yes, we are on the air. I was on the air the other day, Tuesday, in fact, when I left. Soon after I left, the FCC showed up and they were looking for me. I guess they wanted to catch me while I was on the air. They have not come to my office, though. I'm in the yellow pages in the phone book and I got my sign out front. So they're not real serious about finding me. I think what they want to do is catch me in the act next week at my regular Tuesday 1 o'clock time slot.
And are you inviting them, Ed, to show up and dicker with you?
Oh, absolutely. I would love to talk with him. Can Richard hear me when I'm talking?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. Yeah, I would love to also hear from Richard as to what his experience was and what he thinks the FCC's motives are and what they're going to do next with him, his case.
Can you hear Richard as he speaks? Yeah. Say something, Richard.
Yeah, well, good. I mean, I can tell you my experience. It started in September of 1993, and I was, well, I'll use the word allegedly, doing a broadcast on Potrero Hill in San Francisco out of my motorhome when the FCC, or, well, when a car with extremely bright lights came up behind me. The person in the car just sat there for some minutes, you know, like maybe 5 or 6 minutes, and I was starting to get a little nervous about that. So after a while, I went to the back door of the motorhome, opened it up, and there was FCC agent David Dune. He identified himself and everything, and he asked for permission to inspect my equipment, and I refused, and he asked for my ID. I refused that, and then he said, well, if you're not going to cooperate, then I'm going to have to call the police. And I said, well, that's fine. If you want to call the police, you know, you have your job to do, and I have my job to do. I, on the other hand, did not feel like I was obligated to wait around for the police to arrive.
That's good.
So I dismantled my antenna and disconnected my alleged transmitter and popped it up in the driver's cab and drove away. Well, Mr. Dune followed me in his car, and I did not think there was any way I was going to be able to elude him because I was driving a rather large motorhome and he was driving a, you know, just average passenger car. It was... it turned out that I did lose him. It must have been opera night or symphony night at the Civic Center Plaza because there was this ungodly heavy traffic around there. I cut across one of the lanes in traffic and drove up a side street, and I looked back and he hadn't been able to maneuver. And so he was gone, but within minutes, though, I was surrounded by police cars on Webster Street. There must have been upwards of possibly 8 or 10 police cars.
Thank God they're out there protecting us.
Yes, that's SFPD in action.
Some people like you, Richard.
Well, I guess they were taking a night off from arresting people for serving food. So. Anyway, they were extremely nervous and extremely keyed up. They ordered me out of my truck to keep my hands up where they could see them. They grabbed me, put me in handcuffs, took my wallet and my ID from me. And then all of us just sort of stood around looking at each other, and the police said, well, who is this guy and what have we got him for? And then it turned out that nobody really knew at all. The FCC agent had informed the police about when he made this call for a request for assistance was that I was a suspect fleeing a federal agent, which could be interpreted to mean all kinds of things.
Another bombing, perhaps.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like that. And well, then they finally, after a few minutes, the FCC agent arrived on the scene, and he explained, I guess, to the police. I don't know. All this exchange took place out of my hearing, out of my earshot. But apparently, he explained to them that I was a dangerous, deadly pirate radio operator. And the police were kind of amazed that they had been pulled out on a chase like this or something like that. And a few of them even asked me what my broadcast times and signals were so they could tune in.
Oh, really? So did the police end up letting you go, I take it?
They let me go after Mr. Dune, who I understand is the same agent who showed up at your door the other day.
Right.
They let me go after he had copied down my information on my driver's license and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 6 weeks later, I got a notice of apparent liability. That's what they're called, NAL, or notice of apparent liability, in the mail. And, informing me that I was being fined $10,000. Now, I don't know how they get...
Have you paid up yet?
No, I have not, and
you, you only get to have your trial after you pay the fine, is that right?
Well, my understanding is that they don't have any power to impose a fine. They can only send you a request or a notice of apparent liability saying that you're apparently guilty of this crime. But in order to actually collect, they have to take it to a U.S. attorney, and a U.S. attorney has to actually file charges against you.
Oh, my God. Somebody's heard about the Constitution and due process.
What's that?
Someone has heard about Constitution and due process.
Well, apparently it hasn't totally gone out the window yet, but I think it's flying pretty fast.
Now, have any charges been filed against you? Or?
Well, no, not as of yet. I have, there were a series of exchanges between my attorney and the FCC, and for a long while after this, I used to get rather nasty notes from the FCC in the mail, and all this stopped, though, about a year or so ago, when in October of last year, the FCC began focusing pretty much exclusively on Free Radio Berkeley, and I haven't heard from them, and I guess since around June of last year.
So you are broadcasting now from a relatively permanent location, or are you still broadcasting from your mobile home?
No, we're broadcasting from a permanent location in a building in West San Francisco.
What are your call letters?
7 nights a week from early evening until 5 a.m. Mm-hmm. the next morning, and we also broadcast on Sunday afternoon.
And what if people want to tune in, where should they tune?
93.7
FM.
Mm-hmm. My guess, and from what I understand happened in your case, my guess is that the FCC will probably find out whose name your house is rented in, and that person will probably receive one of these NALs in the mail at some point in the next few weeks or so.
That's what happened with Stephen Denifer and Free Radio Berkeley? Or?
Well, more or less, yeah. They came to his house, and they were refused entry into the house, and they were they were told that there was no radio broadcast or anything being done there, and they couldn't come in, and that was that. So they left, and apparently they just checked and found out that he was the rentee of the place, and then sent him the notice. Although I'm not really sure, I never did quite really understand how they determined upon him, because at that time there were several people living in that house.
Mm-hmm. What's the extent of micro-broadcasting, as far as you know? How many stations are there in California and then in the United States that you've heard of?
Well, that's hard to say. I know I can tell you here in the Bay Area, there's San Francisco Liberation Radio, Radio Libre, Free Radio Berkeley, and just within the past week or so, Food Not Bombs Liberation Radio has taken to the air. There's also a station up in Sausalito, which has been on the air for quite some time, and I've heard of stations taking to the air in Mendocino County as well. As far as nationwide, I have no idea how many are on the air.
Is there some kind of fanzine that covers micro-broadcasting that you've heard of that people could refer to?
I'm not really sure. There is a magazine called Monitoring Times, which occasionally has a column written by a guy who does a report on pirate radio.
Do you have that information for our listeners in case they're interested in pursuing that?
No, all I have is the name of the magazine, Monitoring Times.
Monitoring Times.
Yeah.
Well, if anybody's interested in further information, try to give me a call after the show at 423-HUFF. 423-4833, and I will try to follow up on it.
If you're interested, or if your attorney is interested in taking this case up and actually defending the right of micropower to broadcast, our attorneys up here are part of the National Lawyers Guild Committee on Democratic Communication. They're willing to work with other attorneys around the country in terms of helping them to prepare a defense for this kind of attack from the FCC.
Uh-huh. And what attorney do you recommend we speak to?
Lewis N. Hyken, and he's at number 1 Sansom Street, Suite 900 and his phone number is 705-6460.
Uh-huh.
That's in the 415 area.
Can we have his name again, please, Richard?
Yeah, it's Lewis N. Hyken, H-I-K-E-N.
And he's an attorney who's defending you in your case.
He is the attorney who's defending both me and Stephen Dunifer.
And when does that the next hearing come up, and where does that come up?
The next hearing is supposed to come up on July 14th, oddly enough, Bastille Day. Last hearing was held on January 20th, and at that time, the FCC was requesting a temporary injunction against Stephen Dunifer, and they were turned down in that request by Judge Claudia Wilkin.
And this new hearing will be about what?
Well, it'll be they're attempting to redo the same thing all over again. In other words, what happened at the last hearing is Judge Wilkin told the FCC to re-examine their regulations in the light of the arguments that had been presented that day in court by Mr. Hyken with regard to determining whether or not their regulations were constitutional under the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm. So that they
supposedly could now they have, I guess, re-examined those regulations and determined that, in their opinion, they are constitutional and are going to come back to court to, once again, request this injunction.
Now, is that the federal court in Oakland or San Francisco?
It was in Oakland.
Oakland. And that's what time of day on the 14th?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
What time of day on July 14th?
I don't really know.
Okay, it's probably 10 a.m., but that's just a guess.
I imagine your attorney would know. Or Stephen's attorney. If he doesn't know, we're in trouble.
We will find out and announce it later, I'm sure.
Yeah. We'll definitely be announcing it as the date approaches.
Anything further you want to bring up, Richard, or bring to the attention of the audience around?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot I could go into in terms of the original notice of apparent liability. Or one thing my attorney pointed out in one of his responses to the FCC was that their own regulations are apparently unconstitutional and out of date. They're relying on case regulations which were advented long before the advent of micropower technology, which makes micropower radio possible today. There's a lot you could go into. I've got like a 19-page response that was written by my attorney in front of me.
You know, I'd like to get a copy of that response, and maybe at a future time after I've examined it, I can query you about it in a future show.
Okay, yeah, I can make that available.
Just give me a drop it at Robert Norris, 322 Maple Street, Santa Cruz, California, 95060.
Okay.
And the reason I'm kind of hurrying is because Ed has limited time, and I want.
Oh, okay.
But I appreciate your, you know, giving us the story of the FCC agent who could, and the excitement of running around Pechoro Hill pursued by 8 cop cars.
Sure. Well, David Dune, he seems like he's getting around now from Pechoro Hill now to Santa Cruz.
Expense accounts everywhere, I think.
I guess.
Thanks a lot, Richard. I'll be in touch with you.
Okay, take care.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Hey, bye-bye.
All right, well, that's an exciting development. We've got a lot of allies in the Bay Area that are going to be helpful in our legal situation here. We'll be using whatever expertise they can provide, too, to fight it out here. Well, we got another call. Great.
Hey, looks like another call here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're on the air.
Hi, fellas. It's me again.
Hey,
and I have some information that you asked for. Again, there's a magazine and so on. Are you getting feedback? Because I'm on the phone, and I sometimes have to turn off the...
No, it's okay. It's a little bit... it sounds like we're in an echo chamber,
well,
but
listen, I'll get...
no problem.
Is this better?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Fine.
Okay. Then the magazine that... the magazine that you were asking for that, as far as I know, is the ACE magazine, A-C-E.
Hmm.
And they can be reached... They don't have a phone number, but they can be reached at P.O. Box 11201.
11201.
Shawnee Mission, and this is the Shawnee Mission, Kansas.
Kansas.
and the zip is 66207.
Mm-hmm.
0201. They're the really the small zine that that covers so-called pirate radio stations and constitutional micro radio stations.
We should be subscribing to it.
What?
We should be subscribing to it.
Yeah, I think so. If this is becoming a matter, then I also wanted to say about the legal situation. In 1991, when I had Radio Free Venice I think that the situation has really changed. I want to set your minds at rest, obviously without guarantees, but the situation has changed so drastically since. By the way, hi Ed, how are you?
I'm going to have to leave now, but keep talking,
but,
and I'll talk with you soon.
But yeah, okay. I just wanted to say that Judge Wilkins' decision, I think, has completely changed the ball game. When I went on the air, it was April 8th of 91, and I stayed on the air until I was busted by the FCC on November 13th of 91, and I had gone on the air notifying the FCC. I never tried to run away from them because the whole idea was to precipitate a constitutional question, a constitutional issue in the courts, and so I fully expected to be busted. What I didn't expect was that the government would do what they in fact did to me, which was to bust me, not just to take my radio equipment. See, I got a notice of apparent liability way back in the days when those things were for $1,000 instead of $10,000 and $17,000, as we're getting today. But I never expected what actually happened. My whole attitude was, listen, if you guys don't agree, let's go to court and settle this thing before a jury of our peers. And of course, they know that we're right on this matter, and I believe that that's what they expressed when they busted me. They came in, they don't want to go to court, they didn't want a court test at all. So they came in, they went into my room, into my bedroom while I was held with another person in the house who had nothing to do with the radio station. I was held at gunpoint by three federal marshals downstairs.
Wow.
And these guys went upstairs into my bedroom and robbed me of 15 years worth of professional, the materials, audio tapes, video tapes, files, books, my diary, and $800 in cash, which were secreted there among. And in facing five federal judges, just so people know how it was in the old days, thank God for Claudia Wilkin, but I wish there were a few more of her. I've faced now, I'm still, my case is languishing in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals because I've had to do it pretty much myself. And I've faced five federal judges, none of whom is willing to admit that there is a difference between radio equipment and and everything else that they took. They won't even admit that there is a difference because, of course, if they do, they would then have to admit that the agent had violated all of my rights except the Articles 2 and 3 of the Bill of Rights, and that all rights had been violated, and so on. And so they don't admit that in order for the whole edifice not to come toppling down. And so the question is no longer even the constitutional issue of whether we have a right to broadcast. That's what I started out. That's what I thought it would be about. The question has been drowned, in, as I say, in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, unless I have the energy to revive it. But I think that now, honestly, the FCC may be trying to frighten people off. And by the way, Robert, they do that. I mean, apparently 90% of the people who go on the air, I've heard, 90% of them go on the are frightened off at the first sign that the FCC sends them that we know where you are and we want you to stop broadcasting. Over 90%. And then the rest of them, once they start getting tough and start, spreading around fines and things like that, are scared off.
Mm-hmm.
So now what Judge Wilkin has done, in effect, is what she said is basically, I think it's show cause. I don't know if that is still there, but I mean, I think it's a show cause order, basically. Why should I give you an injunction? You haven't answered the questions that have been raised by Louis Hyken and side, Dunifer and Hyken and us guys. And as I say, God bless her, I think that the FCC, once that statement is made, once somebody asks that question, why on earth should I keep these people off the air, I don't think the FCC has a prayer of answering it for any one of at least half a dozen constitutional and other reasons.
Yeah, the actual, I have a decision here in my hands, Tom, and it says, the government has so far failed to address the constitutional issues and the FCC forfeiture action has inadequately addressed them in the arguments before this court. Court should not rule on the constitutionality of the regulations at issue until the FCC has adequately addressed the issue. In light of current technology, the court defers in the first instance to the FCC to provide guidance on the factual and technical issues related to the constitutionality of the regulatory scheme. In light of the current technology, is it a total ban on new licensing of micro-broadcasting the least restrictive means available to protect against chaos in the airwaves? The FCC could provide this guidance in the context of addressing defendants' arguments in the pending forfeiture proceeding or in the context of its rulemaking powers. But on the present record, this court does not find a probability that plaintiff will succeed on the merit, that's the FCC, particularly in the absence of guidance from the FCC on the defendant's constitutional challenge to the regulations at issue. While there may be a serious question as to the merits, on the present record, the court does not find that the balance of harm tips sharply in favor of the FCC. Therefore, they deny, this is in January, the FCC's request for a preliminary injunction to strike down and ban Free Radio Berkeley.
Exactly. And I don't think that, I think that in the presence of, until that is in some way overturned, which hopefully it won't be, I don't think there's any real danger. These guys are just sort of, you know, beating their drums when they come by and try to, you know, and want to see it and so on. I think that's all baloney. I mean, they didn't, I held them off when I was alone, had no legal help, none whatever, and for 7 months I was broadcasting, I think 6-7 days a week, and all I had was my typewriter to kind of intimidate them and so on. They knew where I was right away, I told them. So, you know, when you think that one person alone was able to hold them off before they did, and finally they were driven to breaking, as I say, almost every almost every article of the Bill of Rights to get me, I think you see how weak their case is.
Yeah, I think that's very pertinent that you bring this up, because I'm encouraging, and I don't think the Free Radio Santa Cruz here is going to run from the FCC. Quite the contrary, they're going to make sure the FCC keeps off the property until they have appropriate search warrants and so forth. They think they've picked some patsies. I think they're wrong.
Good.
You know, and I'm hoping that you and your own, if you can get your own radio station going, will be equally successful in keeping them at bay. As I was saying before.
I consider it a can of corn for now. Now, what's not a can of corn is finding a technician and a place to broadcast.
Right.
And because this will be a station. If it ever happens, it would be a station, one in a million, where dissent is welcome. Not only not dissent is, it will be the core of the station.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to say one other thing about, you know, you asked them how many other stations are in the field. I'm not really much more qualified than Richard to answer that, but there are a few. There are a couple of people that are definitely that have been left out, besides myself, of that account. One of them is the Black Rose, probably the granddaddy of us all, who operated in the Fresno area. Walter Dunn, I think is his name, but he's known as the Black Rose, and he's been on he's been busted, Robert, about 4 or 5 times. The last time he told me, when people broke in and they take away his stuff and he finds some way to put it back together again and he just goes back on the air. I mean, that's his.
It's like Food Not Bombs in San Francisco. They take away their cooking pots and their food and they're back the next day. You know?
With more pots. I mean, it's marvelous. He says that he believes that their last raid contributed to the death of his mother, who was a heart patient and so on.
Do you know the call letters in Fresno?
Unfortunately, I don't. I don't even know, Robert. I mean, he's the most elusive of us all, I think. I don't even know that he's broadcasting at present. I know that in 1991 he came down to see me a couple of times, and we were in touch. But certainly, and when the history of my micro radio is told he was in the field, let's say, 4 or 5 years before Mbana Kantako in Springfield. Then there was a guy, there was another broadcaster, Napoleon Williams, and the story of what they did to him is just unbelievable. They got the state working with them, took their little daughter away, took the, you know, trumped up charges that he had assaulted a sheriff or something like that, and took his daughter away. And the only thing that we can find, I mean, the child welfare services on the grounds that they were mistreating their daughter. And it was just, and he finally ended up in jail. And as far as I can make out at this distance, the only thing he'd ever done was to broadcast and bravely from a half-watt station in Decatur, Illinois, not far from Kantako in Springfield.
Is Kantako still broadcasting, do you know?
Oh, I would bet. I haven't been in touch with him recently, but I'm sure, and I can give anybody, I mean, I can give you the number if you want to call and find out, Robert. I've got a little list here.
Sure,
and,
yes, you think
if you're... just a minute, what the heck did I do with the main list? Just a moment. Anyway, he's broadcasting. Then there's a guy called Bill Dugan that started a couple of months after I did in Phoenix, and he's back on the air. At one point, he went off the air after the bust that I went through. He's off the air. He went off the air and basically tried to get a declaratory opinion from the court about the constitutionality of what the FCC was doing, and I think that was stymied. But he is back on the air at least, and I can again tell you how to reach him and his station. And
if you want, you know, maybe the thing to do about those numbers is to leave them on my other number at 423 Huff, and there's an answering machine on now. So after you finished